Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, about 9:43 for those of you that need to sync the watches this morning on a Tuesday. Pearl and Albrock with you rolling through a Tuesday morning. Stunning ruling coming down by the Supreme Court yesterday that essentially ruled against the NCAA, calling the NCAA, essentially claiming the NCAA was violating antitrust laws by placing limits on the education-related benefits that schools can provide to athletes. To get further depth on this, we are very pleased to be joined by Ben Strauss of the Washington Post, also published author, indentured inside story of the rebellion against the NCAA. Ben, good morning. Thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it. Let's start with a Reader's Digest or maybe a Washington Post version of what this ruling means for college sports and why it is so ground shaking.
That's a good place to start. Let's I guess we could sort of say what this ruling is and isn't, right? It very specifically is narrow. It's not a ruling about paying athletes cash. It's not a ruling about social influencing and making money on that or signing autographs and that kind of stuff that we've been talking about for a long time on this issue. It's a really narrow ruling that allows schools to give increased educational benefits. We're talking about laptops or postgraduate internships. So, you know, sort of the immediate effects of this, you might say, you know, why is that a big deal? And it is a big deal sort of in a larger context. And the reason is that this is a 9-0 ruling from a polarized Supreme Court,
sure,
polarized country, that basically said, you know, the NCAA's legal defense of amateurism, you know, we can't pay players, we can't, you know, change the system because amateurism is the special sauce, the secret of college sports. The Supreme Court, you know, resoundingly found that legal defense, you know, didn't carry the day here. So that's the number one. Number two is you also have a number of state laws that have gone into or that have been passed, you know, in the last year or so. Some of them set to go into effect as soon as July 1st that will allow athletes to start making money, you know, on their Instagram followers or Twitter followers or, you know, doing sponsorships, that kind of stuff. And a ruling like this, as resounding as it is, will only encourage that sort of momentum continue. And then just the third thing is there was a concurrent opinion written by Justice Brett Kavanaugh that sort of hinted at what might be to come. And he wrote that, yes, this was a very narrow ruling about, you know, laptops, educational expenses. But he, you know, very openly wondered and pretty skeptically said if this had been a case about paying college athletes, you know, would the NCAA's defense hold up? And he was pretty skeptical of that. And so that, you know, might encourage, probably will encourage more lawsuits. And so that's sort of the 180-degree view of what happened yesterday.
Ben Strauss of the Washington Post joining us, and we really appreciate it. Ben, I can't help but think about 3-5 years down the road at what things might look like. And is this ruling opening Pandora's box to a complete destruction of the system as we've known it forever, or is this incremental? And where are college sports ultimately, do you think, going to land on this? Is it free market, or is there a combination here that can still allow something like the NCAA to operate?
Yeah, I think that there is some sort of hybrid model. I don't know what the role of the NCAA specifically would be, right? The NCAA for a long time has been this enforcement body, if going after schools and players, if they got money for an autograph or, accepted money for a meal or really like pick IU and things like that. And it's hard to imagine that, enforcement continuing as we've known about it and sort of thought about the NCAA for a long time. I think there's going to be a lot of conference control and maybe conferences setting rules and benefits and that kind of thing. I don't think that you're going to see like the destruction of college sports though, no matter where this ends up. I think, schools are already spending a whole lot of money to recruit players, building locker rooms and building facilities and paying coaches millions of dollars, right? Nick Saban makes $10 million a year. Jim Harbaugh makes $10 million a year. Greg Marshall in Wichita was making $4 or $5 million, I think, in the last couple of years. And so I think you're just going to see a distribution of money in a different way if at some point it is allowed to flow to the athletes.
Ben Strauss, the book Indentured, Inside Story of the Rebellion Against the NCAA at the Washington Post. So glad to have him with us. All right, Ben, how has the NCAA survived for so long with that iron fist in a essentially free market system, and how has it been able to skirt around antitrust laws for all of this time? Over 100 years, for goodness sakes. It doesn't seem to add up. So based on your understanding of the NCAA, the history of it, and hence the rebellion against it, how has this stood for so long anyway?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I think that in a lot of ways, it's because people really like college sports. And even in Judge Kavanaugh's opinion that was, so withering and so fiery, he talked about, the communities of Eugene, Oregon and Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and what a Saturday fall means in, Columbus, Ohio, and the College World Series and the Softball World Series. And, college sports is part of the fabric, the unique fabric of the country. And I think there has been this idea that if you, try to change it or, give athletes more benefits, this has been what the NCAA has sold for a long time, is that the whole system would collapse. And nobody wants the system to collapse. And I think as we've gotten more recently in the last, 10, 15 years a little bit, the amount of money in the system, college sports is a $10 billion industry at this point. That's, almost as big as the NFL. And so, when coaches are making $10 million, when athletic directors are making, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and conference commissioners are making millions of dollars, and the TV revenue is just in the billions of dollars, it's just really, really hard to say you can commercialize every aspect of this enterprise, squeeze every dollar out of this enterprise, and say the athletes can't participate in that economy. And so there's just so much money at this point. It's just harder to sell, the idea of amateurism to the public and to the courts, as the Supreme Court said.
Yeah, if you can't convince the Supreme Court, you're probably in trouble, right? And everybody's worried about what the effect on smaller sports is, and if this money's not going, but the money's clearly there. What can athletes do? Do you think is it a ability to organize and collectively bargain something here, or what's your, in your opinion, the solution to getting athletes what they deserve, but preserving some of the sports and some of the things that wouldn't be able to survive without a little of the money coming to them from the bigger programs, obviously?
I think that like in the maybe the best scenario is different conferences would end up setting up different rules. It's sort of, you know, the SEC would, you know, be a body who organizes the SEC conference and the Big 12 and the Big 10. And I think you'd like to have an entity that negotiated the terms on behalf of athletes. And then you could set up a system where, you know, there was X amount of money to pay players and, you know, you figured out Title IX compliance. And then you wouldn't have to worry about antitrust law because the players would be an active participant in what the system looked like. And I do think we're still, I think this is a pretty significant step yesterday. It's also just sort of the beginning. And I think we're probably still at least 5 years, maybe a little longer, from seeing how this really shakes out completely. But it's not totally dissimilar from, you know, the way free agency changed Major League Baseball in the 1970s, for example, or, you know, free agency changed the NFL. The NFL didn't have free agency until the early 1990s. And that process of what that ended up look like took, you know, really close to a decade. And so I think we're on a similar path with college sports.
The quote from Brett Kavanaugh, the NCAA is not above the law, the justice writes. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America, end quote. So what's the conversation behind the walls at the NCAA in Indianapolis today? Where do they see their role moving forward in your estimation, Ben?
Well, if you look at what they said yesterday, they put out a statement that focused and, you know, very clearly highlighted the narrowness of this decision. You know, they said that the court recognized that there were educational expenses and non-educational expenses, which, you know, we should note is because the case that they were considering focused very clearly on educational expenses. And so while we're talking about sort of bigger picture, you know, larger context stuff, the NCAA, you know, focused very narrowly on this decision and then the specifics of it, because it wasn't, you know, a big broad case. It was very narrow. And then the lawyer of the NCAA had a quote yesterday, you know, saying, don't pay attention to the Brett Kavanaugh concurrence, because it's correctly noting that it isn't binding law and it's one justice's name on one opinion. And, you know, we don't actually know whether the, you know, other eight justices agree with him. So I don't think you're going to see a sea change inside Indianapolis. I think, you know, that for a long time it, you know, fought everything tooth and nail. And I don't know if this is, you know, something that's going to change that. I think it's going to be really fascinating in the next week or so to see what the NCAA does or says, or if they challenge, you know, and ask for injunctive relief on any of these state laws that are set to go into effect. So I think it's a really critical, like, next 7 days for the NCAA, but I don't expect them to all of a sudden, you know, take a new position, a new posture on any of this. Like, you know, the essence of their being over the last, like, however many decades is amateurism. And even in the face of so many lawsuits and, you know, a lot of discussion about this, it's been a pretty hardline stance there.
Ben, in about the 1 minute that we have remaining, so are they in an adjusting survival mode right now, just trying to, I hate to be cynical, but this is the NCAA that we're talking about. Are they in a protective mode right now, trying to figure out how to protect the golden goose, as it were, and realizing that maybe kicking and screaming, they're going to have to adjust the way that they've done business? Because obviously, the way they've done business isn't going to work moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, protect for as long as possible. You know, there's, you know, every day, every year that there isn't, you know, larger changes is, you know, another day or another year that protects the status quo and, you know, keeps the money in the same place that it's been. Right. And so I think you said kicking and screaming. I think, right, somebody's going to have to, you know, pass a law, there's going to have to be a court ruling, like something, even this that sort of portends bigger changes, you're going to actually have the change or another lawsuit or whatever it is that, you know, puts the hammer down because this only just portended it. And I think you're going to I don't think that that sort of the writing on the wall is enough for the NCAA and the schools that are, you know, making these or not making these changes. It's going to you're going to need another, you know, few, you know, hammers to be dropped before, you know, the NCAA or the schools sort of go along with it. Because this is just sort of like, you know, predicting my what might come.
Yeah, the many, many layers of college sports in the NCAA. Ben Strauss has been with us this morning, Washington Post. The book, Indentured, Inside Story of the Rebellion Against the NCAA. Ben, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, there Good he stuff. Goes. Ben Strauss from the Washington Post gave us a little meat on the bone to consider. We'll talk about that when we come back on the other side. Plenty more for hour number two, Sports Daily, on a Tuesday. More news out of the NFL that was a little, I thought, better, a lot better, because of the manner in which it's been received than the story involving Frank Clark will explain. But a lot to get to here as we unpack a little bit on our chat with Ben Strauss from the Washington Post. Give us a couple of minutes. We'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.